The Gates of Horn and Ivory, by Francis Rosenfeld. Chapter 8. The Blessed Isles. Persephone stood tall on the bow of the ship, against the winds. Behind her, the Fortunes Chosen, the ones who managed to navigate its treacherous waters through 3 lifetimes in a row, without reproach, were gazing towards the islands in the distance with apprehension and awe, not yet able to believe their luck, eyes moist for what they left behind. Lost for words, they feared the promise of this new and wonderful existence was just a mirage which would dissipate the second they stopped believing it. Hades stood next to his wife, like a symbolic shelter against the winds. He always attended these happy occasions when mortals earned themselves the right to perpetual bliss. Also, he loved the Fortunate Isles, which he rarely found the time to visit, with his schedule as full as it always was, and besides, he had promised Persephone. The islands were too, so close to each other one could think them a single land mass. They weren't that far from the shore, but a whole world removed in terms of privilege and grace, even compared to the Elysian fields. Their wonder beckoned from afar, an enchanting image in rose and gold, glowing in the sunset. Birds the likes one had never heard or seen populated its spicy clove forests, their song more beautiful than the sounds of the lyre, and a divine fragrance of vanilla dripped from their branches, blended with the scent of tuberoses and plumeria to turn up an intoxicating perfume. In the shade of flowering trees, soft grass grew, and the island's dwellers often enjoyed spending time there, in the temperate breeze, to socialize, engage in sports, or listen to wonderful music. In short, a lovely vacation resort. Hades hoped Persephone would like it, but was a little unsure, considering his bride spent a lot of time in the land of illusions and Hecate's swamp. He assumed these preferences shed some light on her tastes and worried the Isles might look a little too cheerful and touristy for her. So, to preempt potential disappointment, he had made this journey a work trip. Goodness knows she never backed out from one of those if her happiness depended on it. It is interesting how one's early upbringing can shape one's entire personality. Persephone had been so ingrained with the spirit of deference, duty, accountability, and putting others first, she felt guilty every time she enjoyed herself, an awkward challenge for her subjects, who worried they offended her every time they showed her the respect she was entitled to, as goddess and queen. Hades always hid her privileges inside some mundane responsibility, so she could enjoy them fully, without guilt. This time she was to be the ambassador of goodwill, welcoming the souls of the blessed to their new land, and like every other queenly task she was entrusted with, she was doing her best to acquit herself of it with blameless address. Hades thought it hilarious that Persephone had never understood the only thing her role ever required, as queen of the underworld, aside from making him happy, of course, was to exert her absolute will over everything and everyone in her domain. Instead, she belly ached over every decision she thought might upset somebody and often hid in her gardens, away from all the pomp and genuflecting, to be among her flowers and daydream. He liked to watch her there, laughing alone to some inner musing or getting carried away with the scent of a flower, like a young girl lost in her own little world, happy and carefree. Hades wanted so much to see his wife happy, and every one of her smiles felt like a vindication of his efforts. But there was also another part of Persephone, a dark maturity that stood in stark contrast with her youthful and innocent demeanor, and sometimes her eyes darkened with thoughts he couldn't plumb, and then it felt as if another Persephone, much older, looked back at him through her eyes. He often worried that old Persephone passed a lot harsher judgment on him than his innocent bride, who, if he had to say it himself, was hopelessly smitten with him. They were approaching the Isles, and the boat carried them through the narrow passage between them to the shore. The path was barely visible through the tall beach grasses, weaving between strange white stones, perfectly round, which looked like giant snails or the eggs of some enormous mythical creature. At equal intervals, torches planted in the sand lit their way towards a city which was announcing itself from the distance with sounds of music and enjoyable, lively chatter. The Fortunate Isles enjoyed the privilege, unknown anywhere else in the underworld, of experiencing sunrise. Aelios himself boarded his chariot there, at the Gate of the East, to start his long journey across the sky and return at dusk, when he blessed the realm of the dead with the light of perpetual sunset. He saw Persephone, smiled and nodded, and a shudder passed through her bones, memories of the cold early spring, with its crude vegetation, and the raw and unforgiving parsimony of the world of the living, but most of all, its ever-flowing river of blood which seemed to be the solution for everything. "Are you cold?" Hades whispered in her ear. "No," she smiled. "Just a little tired, is all. You should have something to eat." Here, he handed her a small bowl of ambrosia which had materialized by means unknown in his hand. She took it, growing paler still, to Hades's frustration, shocked by this strange déjà vu that happened in such an unexpected context. She munched on her food in silence, and it seemed to restore her strength and her wits. "You know you can tell me anything, Persephone," he whispered. "You know that, right? You can tell me what's wrong." "Nothing, my love," she responded. "Nothing. As I said, I'm just a little tired." The older Persephone was looking at him through eyes which were filled with a darkness he couldn't understand. He had brought her here to make her happy. He wondered what he did wrong, he doubted himself, and he hated that. Zeus was right, good luck making a wife happy, and when you don't, life could get abysmally ashen and dull. Persephone had to force the words out of her mouth, just to give him some peace. "It's just seeing Aeolus's chariot brings back some hard memories of the living world. Was it that bad? What happened to you out there?" She hesitated, wishing away this conversation with all her might, but indulged his concern anyway. "Life can be savage sometimes." She remembered her attributions and asked, startled by the sudden quietness of the surroundings. "Where is the group? I was supposed to show them around and help them orient themselves." "Don't fret, wife. They made it to Elysium. They'll figure it out from there." He placed his hands on her shoulders and asked, "Look at me, Persephone. Look at me." She returned him a tentative gaze, still feeling guilty about abrogating her duties. "Not everything is your responsibility." Persephone watched the groups of people from a distance. They seemed to enjoy themselves, there was dancing, and laughter, and music, and she could hear the sounds of a wedding ceremony approaching, and everyone was clearly excited about the blessed event. Ripe fruit and endless abundance were always within reach, and the islanders lacked for nothing, and yet there was something missing in this otherworldly paradise, something she saw in the eyes of the living and never understood it, irrepressible hope and desire, wishing for things and fighting for things, in the face of the most dire odds. Love in the face of death, courage in the face of death, trying and failing to deny suffering. Most of all, this irrational belief every mortal had that their life was an exception, and therefore would never end. The world of the living was unforgiving, violent, and cruel, and yet, every soul in Hades was always eager to return, to play their chance again against the fates, because hope was trapped on its side, hope, the only thing that made life worth living. "The young wedded couple learned you were here and requested the honor of your blessing," Hades spoke softly, as if worried not to startle her. "What say you?" "Nothing would make me happier," she found a task to make herself useful and the light in her eyes returned. "They also invited us to their wedding feast. I don't think we can refuse. It's not done." He was relieved he found something to take her mind off of whatever it was that happened to her that she was unwilling to talk about. "I hear Dionysus picked the wine himself," he teased her. Persephone couldn't help a smile when a vivid picture of her cousin, sprawled in his chair and schmoozing shamelessly, while the Maenads looked at him like he was the glory of Olympus, popped into her head. "It should be good then. If I knew, I would have brought some herbs. I wouldn't worry about that. I'm sure they're fully stocked," Hades laughed out loud. A large group of celebrants approached them, holding hands in a line dance which they enticed them to join, and Persephone gaped dumbfounded at the Lord of the Underworld, who started dancing with the light-footed ease of the Graces. He stretched out his hand, laughing and inviting her to join in too. "What? You thought you knew everything about me? I may hold some surprises yet."